Fetch outrageous prices.
I looked down into the workshop, but couldn't see Fela anywhere in the milling bodies. I turned back to Manet.
Want to keep playing dutiful mentor and show me how?
He absently ran his hands through his wild hair and shrugged.
Sure.
I was playing at Anchors later that night when I caught the eye of a beautiful girl sitting at one of the crowded tables in the back. She looked remarkably like Denner, but I knew that to be nothing more than my own fancy. I hoped to see her enough that I had been catching glimpses of her out of the corner of my eye for days. My second glance told me the truth. It was Denner, singing along with half the folk in Anchors to Drover's Daughters. She saw I was looking in her direction and waved. Her appearance caught me so much by surprise that I completely forgot what my fingers were doing and my song fell to pieces. Everyone laughed and I took a grand bow to hide my embarrassment. They cheered and booed me in equal amounts for a minute or so, enjoying my failure more than they had the song itself. Such is human nature. I waited for their attention to drift away from me, then made my way casually to where Denner was sitting. She stood to greet me.
I'd heard you were playing on this side of the river, she said. I can't imagine how you keep the job if you fall apart every time a girl gives you a wink.
I felt myself flush a little. It doesn't happen that often.
The winking or the falling apart?
Unable to think of a response, I felt myself flush redder and she laughed.
How long will you be playing tonight? She asked.
Not much longer, I lied. I owed Anchor at least another hour. She brightened.
Good. Come away with me afterward. I need someone to walk with.
Hardly believing my good luck, I made a bow to her. At your service, certainly. Let me go and finish up. I made my way to the bar where Anchor and two of his serving girls were busy pulling drinks. Unable to catch his eye, I grabbed hold of his apron as he hurried past me. He jerked to a stop and barely avoided spilling a tray of drinks onto a table of customers.
God's teeth, boy, what's the matter with you?
Anchor, I've got to go. I can't stay till closing tonight. His face soured.
Crowds like this don't come for the asking. They ain't going to stay without a little song or something to entertain them.
I'll do one more song, a long one, but I've got to go after that. I gave him a desperate look. I swear I'll make it up to you. He looked at me more closely.
Are you in trouble?
I shook my head.
It's a girl, then.
He turned his head at the sound of voices calling for more drinks, then waved me away briskly.
Fine, go. But mind you, make it a good long song, and you'll owe me.
I moved to the front of the room and clapped my hands for the room's attention. Once the room was moderately quiet, I began to play. By the time I struck the third chord, everyone knew what it was. Tinker Tanner. The oldest song in the world. I took my hands from the lute and began to clap. Soon everyone was pounding out the rhythm in unison, feet against the floor, mugs on tabletops. The sound was almost overwhelming, but it faded appropriately when I sang the first verse. Then I led the room in the chorus with everyone singing along, some with their own words, some in their own keys. I moved to a nearby table as I finished my second verse and led the room in the chorus again. Then I gestured expectantly towards the table to sing a verse of their own. It took a couple of seconds for them to realize what I wanted, but the expectation of the whole room was enough to encourage one of the more tipsy students to shout out a verse of his own. It gained him thunderous applause and cheers. Then, as everyone sang the chorus again, I moved to another table and did the same thing. Before too long, folk were taking the initiative to sing out their own verses when the chorus was over. I made my way to where Denner waited by the outer door, and together we slipped out into the early evening twilight.
That was cleverly done, she said as we began to stroll away from the tavern. How long do you think they'll keep it up?
That will all depend on how quickly Anchor manages to pull down drinks for the lot of them. I came to a stop at the edge of the alley that ran between the back of Anchor's tavern and the bakery next door.
If you will excuse me a moment, I have to put my lute away.
In an alley?
She asked.
In my room. Stepping lightly, I moved quickly up the side of the building. Right foot rain barrel, left foot window ledge, left hand iron drainpipe, and I swung myself onto the lip of the first-story roof. I hopped across the alley to the roof of the bakery and smiled at her startled intake of breath. From there it was a short stroll upward, and I hopped back across to the second-story roof of Anchor's. Tripping the latch to my window, I reached through and set my loot lightly on my bed before heading back down the way I had come.
"Does Anchor charge a penny every time you use his stairs?"
she asked as I neared the ground. I stepped down from the rain barrel and brushed my hands against my trousers.
"I come and go at odd hours,"
I explained easily as I fell into step beside her.
"Am I correct in understanding that you are looking for a gentleman to walk with you tonight?"
A smile curved her lips as she looked sideways at me.
"Quite."
"Oh, that is unfortunate," I sighed. "I am no gentleman." Her smile grew.
"I think that you're close enough."
"I would like to be closer."
"Then come walking with me."
"It would please me greatly." However, I slowed my walk a bit, my smile fading into a more serious expression.
"What about Savoy?"
Her mouth made a line.
"He staked a claim on me, then?"
"Well, not as such, but there are certain protocols involved."
"A gentleman's agreement?"
she asked acidically. "More like honor among thieves, if you will." She looked me in the eye.
"Quoth,"
she said seriously.
"Steal me."
I bowed and made a sweeping gesture towards the world. "At your command." We continued our walk. The moon was shining, making the houses and shops around us seem washed and pale.
"How is Savoy anyway? I haven't seen him for a while."
She waved a hand to dismiss the thought of him.
"I haven't either. Not for lack of trying on his part."
My spirits rose a bit.
"Really?"
She rolled her eyes.
"Roses? I swear you men have all your romance from the same worn book. Flowers are a good thing, a sweet thing to give a lady. But it's always roses, always red, and always perfect hothouse blooms when they can come by them."
She turned to face me.
"When you see me, do you think of roses?"
I knew enough to shake my head, smiling.
"What then? If not a rose, what do you see?"
Trapped, I looked her up and down once, as if trying to decide.
"Well,"
I said slowly,
"you'll have to forgive us men. You see, it's not an easy thing to pick a flower to fit a girl, if you'll excuse my expression."
She grimaced.
"Pick a flower?" "Yes, I'll excuse it this time. The trouble is, when you gift a girl with flowers, your choice can be construed so many different ways. A man might give you a rose because he feels you are beautiful, or because he fancies their shade or shape or softness similar to your lips. Roses are expensive, and perhaps he wishes to show through a valuable gift that you are valuable to him."
"You make a good case for roses," she said. "The fact remains, I do not like them. Pick another flower to suit me."
"But what suits? When a man gives you a rose, what you see may not be what he intends. You may think he sees you as delicate or frail. Perhaps you dislike a suitor who considers you all sweet and nothing else. Perhaps the stem is thorned, and you assume he thinks you likely to hurt a hand too quick to touch. But if he trims the thorns, you might think he has no liking for a thing that can defend itself with sharpness. There's so many ways a thing can be interpreted," I said. "What is a careful man to do?"
She cast a sidelong look to me.
"If the man is you, I'd guess he would spin clever words and hope the question was forgotten."
She tilted her head.
"It isn't. What flower would you pick for me?"
"Very well, let me think." I turned to look at her, then away. "Let's run down a list. Dandelion might be good. It is bright, and there is a brightness about you. But dandelion is common, and you are not a common creature. Roses we have dealt with and discarded. Nightshade. No. Nettle, perhaps." She made a face of mock outrage and showed me her tongue. I tapped a finger to my lips as if reconsidering. You are correct. Except for your tongue, it doesn't suit you. She huffed and crossed her arms. Wild oat, I exclaimed, startling a laugh from her. Its wildness suits you, but it is a small flower and bashful. For that, as well as other, I cleared my throat, more obvious reasons, I think we'll pass the wild oat by.
Pity, she said.
Daisy is a good one. I bulled ahead, not letting her distract me. Tall and slender, willing to grow by roadsides, a hearty flower, not too delicate. Daisy is self-reliant. I think it might suit you. But let us continue on our list. Iris? Too gaudy. Thistle? Too distant. Violet? Too brief. Trillium? There's a thing. A fair flower. Doesn't take to cultivation. The texture of the petals. I made the boldest motion of my young life and brushed the side of her neck gently with a pair of fingers. Smooth enough to match your skin, just barely. But it is too close to the ground.
This is quite a bouquet you've brought for me, she said gently.
Unconsciously, she raised a hand to the side of her neck where I had touched her, held it there a moment, then let it fall. A good sign or a bad one? Was she wiping my touch away or pressing it close? Uncertainty filled me more strongly than before, and I decided to press ahead with no more blatant risks. I stopped walking.
Cellus flower.
She stopped and turned to look at me.
All this, and you pick a flower I don't know. What is a cellus flower? Why?
It is a deep red flower that grows on a strong vine. Its leaves are dark and delicate. They grow best in shadowy places, but the flower itself finds stray sunbeams to bloom in. I looked at her. That suits you. There is much of you that is both shadow and light. It grows in deep forests and is rare because only skilled folk can tend one without harming it. It has a wondrous smell and is much sought and seldom found. I paused and made a point of examining her.
Yeah, since I am forced to pick, I would choose cellus.
She looked at me, looked away.
You think too much of me.
I smiled. Perhaps you think too little of yourself. She caught a piece of my smile and shone it back at me.
You were closer earlier in your list. Daisies, simple and sweet. Daisies are the way to win my heart.
I will remember it. We started walking again.
What flower would you bring me?
I teased, thinking to catch her off guard.
A willow blossom, she said without a second's hesitation.
I thought for a long minute.
The willows have blossomed.
She looked up and to the side, thinking,
I don't think so.
A rare treat to be given one, then, I chuckled. Why a willow blossom?
You remind me of a willow,
she said easily.
Strong, deep-rooted and hidden. You move easily when the storm comes, but never farther than you wish.
I lifted my hands as if fending off a blow.
Cease these sweet words, I protested. You seek to bend me to your will, but it will not work. Your flattery is naught to me but wind.
She watched me for a moment as if to make sure my tirade was complete.
Beyond all other trees,
she said with a curl of a smile on her elegant mouth.
The willow moves to the wind's desire.
The stars told me 5 hours had passed. But it seemed hardly any time at all before we came to the oaken oar where she was staying in Imre. At the doorway there was a moment that lasted for an hour as I considered kissing her. I had been tempted by the thought a dozen times on the road as we talked. When we paused on Stonebridge to watch the river in the moonlight underneath a linden tree in one of Imre's parks. At those times I felt a tension building between us, something almost tangible. When she looked sideways at me with her secret smile, the tilt of her head, the way she almost faced me, made me think she must be hoping for me to do something. Put my arm around her, kiss her. How did one know? How could I be certain? I couldn't. So I resisted the pull of her. I did not want to presume too much, did not want to offend her or embarrass myself. What's more, Deok's warning had made me uncertain. Perhaps what I felt was nothing more than Denna's natural charm, her charisma. Like all boys of my age, I was an idiot when it came to women. The difference between me and the others is that I was painfully aware of my ignorance, while others, like Simon, bumbled around making asses of themselves with their clumsy courting. I could think of nothing worse than making some unwelcome advance toward Denna and having her laugh at the awkwardness of my attempt. I hate nothing more than doing things badly. So I made my goodbyes and watched her enter the side door of the Oaken Oar. I took a deep breath and could hardly keep from laughing or dancing about. I was so full of her. The smell of the wind through her hair, the sound of her voice, the way the moonlight cast shadows across her face. Then slowly, my feet settled to the ground. Before I had taken 6 steps, I sagged like a sail when the wind fades. As I walked back through the town, past sleeping houses and dark inns, my mood swung from elation to doubt in the space of 3 brief breaths. I had ruined everything. All the things I had said, things that seemed so clever at the time, were in fact the worst things a fool could say. Even now she was inside, breathing a sigh of relief to finally be rid of me. But she had smiled, had laughed. She hadn't remembered our first meeting on the road from Tarbin. I couldn't have made that much of an impression on her. "Steal me," she had said. I should have been bolder and kissed her at the end. I should have been more cautious. I had talked too much. I had said too little. Chapter 63. Walking and Talking. Willem and Simon were already well into their lunches when I arrived at our usual spot in the courtyard. "Sorry," I said as I set my loot on the cobblestones near the bench. "Got caught up haggling." I'd been on the other side of the river buying a dram of quicksilver and a pouch of sea salt. The last had cost me dearly, but for once I wasn't concerned about money. If fortune smiled on me, I would be moving up the ranks in the fishery soon, and that meant my money troubles would soon be over. While shopping in Imre, I had also, quite by coincidence, wandered past the inn where Denna was staying, but she hadn't been there, or at the Aeolian, or in the park where we'd stopped to talk last night. All the same, I was in a fine mood. I tipped my loot case onto its side and flipped it open so the sun could warm the new strings, helping them stretch. Then I settled onto the stone bench under the pennant pole next to my 2 friends.
"So where were you last night?"
Simon asked too casually. It was only then I remembered that the 3 of us had planned to meet up with Fenton and play corners last night. Seeing Denna had completely driven the plan from my mind.
"Oh God, I'm sorry, Sim. How long did you wait for me?"
He gave me a look.
"I'm sorry," I repeated, hoping I looked as guilty as I felt. "I forgot."
Sim grinned, shrugging it off.
"It's not a big deal. When we figured out you weren't going to show, we went to the library to drink and look at girls." "Was Fenton mad?"
"Furious," Willem said calmly, finally entering the conversation. "Said he was going to box your ears next time he saw you."
Sim's grin widened.
"He called you a fluff-headed L.A. with no respect for his betters."
"Made claims about your parentage and sexual tendency towards animals,"
Willem said with a straight face.
"Entertainings, cock,"
Simon sang with his mouth full. Then he laughed and started to choke. I pounded him on the back.
Where were you?
Willem asked while Sim tried to get his breath back.
Ankara said you left early.
For some reason, I found myself reluctant to talk about Denner.
I met someone.
Someone more important than us?
Willem asked in a flat tone that could be taken for dry humor or criticism.
A girl,
I admitted. One of his eyebrows went up.
The one you've been chasing around?
I haven't been chasing anyone, I protested. She found me at Anchor's.
Good sign,
Willem said. Simon nodded wisely, then looked up with a playful glint in his eye.
So, did you make any music?
He nudged me with an elbow and wagged his eyebrows up and down.
A little duet.
He looked too ridiculous for me to be offended.
No music, she just wanted someone to walk her home.
Walk her home?
He said suggestively, wagging his eyebrows again. I found it less amusing this time.
It was dark out, I said seriously. I just escorted her back to Imre.
Oh, Sim said, disappointed.
You left Ankara's early,
Will said slowly,
and we waited for an hour. Does it take you 2 hours to walk to Imre and back?
It was a long walk, I admitted.
How long is long?
Simon asked.
A few hours,
I looked away. 6.
6 hours? Sim asked. Come on! I think I'm entitled to a few details after listening to you ramble on about her for the last 2 span.
I began to bristle.
I don't ramble, we just walked, I said. Talked.
Sim looked doubtful.
Oh, come on! For 6 hours?
Willem tapped Simon's shoulder.
He's telling the truth.
Simon glanced over at him.
Why do you say that?
He sounds more sincere than that when he lies.
If the two of you will be quiet for a minute or so, I'll tell you the whole of it. Fair?
They nodded. I looked down at my hands, trying to collect my thoughts, but they wouldn't fall into any sort of orderly pattern.
We took the long way back to Imre, stopped on Stonebridge for a while, went to a park outside town, sat by the river. We talked about nothing really, places we've been, songs.
I realized I was rambling and shut my mouth. I picked my next words carefully.
I thought about doing more than walking and talking, but
I stopped. I had no idea what to say. They were both silent for a moment.
I'll be,
Willem marveled.
The mighty Kvoth brought low by a woman.
If I didn't know you, I'd think you were scared,
Simon said, not quite seriously.
You're damn right I'm scared,
I said in a low voice, wiping my hands nervously against my trousers.
You'd be too if you'd ever met her. It's all I can do to sit here instead of running off to Imre, hoping to see her through a store window or pass her crossing the street.
I gave a shaky smile.
Go then.
Simon smiled and gave me a little push.
Godspeed. If I knew a woman like that, I wouldn't be here eating lunch with the likes of you two.
He brushed his hair away from his eyes and gave me another push with his free hand.
Go on.
I stayed where I was.
It's not that easy.
Nothing's ever easy with you,
Willem muttered.
Of course it's that easy,
Simon laughed.
Go tell us some of what you just told us. Right,
I said with dark sarcasm,
as if it were as simple as singing. Besides, I don't know if she would want to hear it. She's something special. What would she want with me?
Simon gave me a frank stare.
She came looking for you. She obviously wants something.
There was a moment of silence, and I hurried to change the subject while I had the chance.
Manet's given me permission to start my journeyman project.
Already?
Sim gave me an anxious look.
Will Kilvin go along with it? He's not a big one for cutting corners.
I didn't cut any corners, I said. I just picked things up quickly.
Willem gave an amused snort, and Sim spoke up before the two of us started to bicker.
What are you doing for your project, sympathy lamp?
Everyone does a lamp,
Willem said. I nodded.
I wanted to do something different, maybe a
Gearwin, but Manet told me to stick to the lamp. The belling tower struck four. I got to my feet and gathered up my loot case, ready to head to class.
You should tell her, Simon said. If you like a girl, you have to let her know.
How's that working out for you so far?
I said, irritated that Sim of all people would presume to give me relationship advice.
Statistically speaking, how often has that strategy paid off in your vast experience?
Willem made a point of looking elsewhere while Sim and I glared at each other. I looked away first, feeling guilty.
Besides, there's nothing to tell, I muttered. I like spending time with her, and now I know where she's staying. That means I can find her when I go looking.
Chapter 64 Nine in the Fire. The next day, as luck would have it, I made a trip to Imre. Then, since I just happened to be in the neighborhood, I stopped by the Oak and Ore. The owner didn't know the name Denner or Diane, but a young, lovely dark-haired girl named Dinah was renting a room there. She wasn't in right now, but if I cared to leave a note, I declined his offer, comforted by the fact that since I now knew where Denner was staying, finding her would be relatively easy. However, I had no luck catching Denner at the Oak and Ore over the next 2 days. On the third day, the owner informed me that Denner had left in the middle of the night, taking all her things and leaving her bill unpaid. After stopping by a few taverns at random and not finding her, I walked back to the university, not knowing if I should be worried or irritated. 3 more days and 5 more fruitless trips to Imre. Neither Diok nor Threep had heard any news of her. Diok told me that it was her nature to disappear like this, and that looking for her would serve about as much purpose as calling for a cat. I knew it to be good advice, and ignored it. I sat in Kilvin's office trying to look calm as the great shaggy master turned my sympathy lamp over in his huge hands. It was my first solo project as an artificer. I'd cast the plates and ground the lenses. I doped the emitter without giving myself arsenic poisoning. Most importantly, mine was the alar and the intricate sigildry that turned the individual pieces into a functioning handheld sympathy lamp. If Kilvin approved of the finished product, he would sell it and I would receive part of the money as a commission. More importantly, I would become an artificer in my own right, albeit a fledgling one. I would be trusted to pursue my own projects with a large degree of freedom. It was a big step forward in the ranks of the fishery, a step towards gaining the rank of Raylar, and more importantly, my financial freedom. Finally, he looked up.
"This is finally made, Elir Kvoth," he said, "but the design is not typical."
I nodded. "I made a few changes, sir. If you turn it on, you'll see." Kilvin made a low sound that could have been an amused chuckle or an irritated grunt. He set the lamp down on the table and walked around the room, snuffing all the lamps but one.
"Do you know how many sympathy lamps I have had explode in my hands over the years, Elir Kvoth?"
I swallowed and shook my head. "How many?"
"None," he said gravely, "because I am always careful. I am always absolutely sure of what I hold in my hands. You must learn patience, Elir Kvoth. A moment in the mind is worth 9 in the fire."
I dropped my eyes and tried to look appropriately chastised. Kilvin reached out and extinguished the one remaining lamp, bringing the room to near total darkness. There was a pause, then a distinctive reddish light welled from the hand lamp to shine against a wall. The light was very dim, less than that of a single candle.
"The action on the switch is graded," I said quickly. "It's more of a rheostat than a switch, really."
Kilvin nodded.
"Cleverly done. That is not something most bother with on a small lamp such as this."
The light grew brighter, then dimmer, then brighter again.
"The sigildry itself seems quite good,"
Kilvin said slowly as he set the lamp down on the table.
"But the focus of your lens is flawed. There is very little diffusion."
It was true. Instead of lighting the whole room, as was typical, my lamp revealed a narrow slice of the room, the corner of the work table and half of the large black slate that stood against the wall. The rest of the room remained dark. "It's intentional," I said. "There are lanterns like that. Bullseye lanterns." Kilvin was little more than a dark shape across the table.
"Such things are known to me, Elir Quoth."
His voice held a hint of reproach.
"They are much used for unsavory business, business Arcanists should have no mingling with."
"I thought sailors used them," I said.
"Burglars use them,"
Kilvin said seriously.
"And spies, and other folk who do not wish to reveal their business during the dark hours of night."
My vague anxiety grew suddenly sharper. I had considered this meeting mostly a formality. I knew I was a skilled artificer, better than many who had worked much longer in Kilvin's shop. Now I was suddenly worried that I might have made a mistake, and wasted nearly 30 hours of work on the lamp, not to mention over a whole talent of my own money that I'd invested in materials. Kilvin made a non-committal grunt and muttered under his breath. The half-dozen oil lamps around the room sputtered back into life, filling the room with natural light. I marveled at the master's casual execution of a 6-way binding. I couldn't even guess where he had drawn the energy from.
"It's just that everyone makes a sympathy lamp for their first project," I said to fill the silence. "Everyone always follows the same old schema. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to see if I could make something new."
"I expect what you wanted was to demonstrate your extreme cleverness," Kilvin said matter-of-factly. "You wished to not only finish your apprenticeship in half the usual time, you wanted to bring me a lamp of your own improved design. Let us be frank, Elir Quoth. Your making this lamp is an attempt to show that you are better than the ordinary apprentice, is it not?"
As he said this, Kilvin looked directly at me, and for a moment there was none of his characteristic distraction lurking behind his eyes. I felt my mouth go dry. Underneath his shaggy beard and heavily accented aturan, Kilvin had a mind like a diamond. What had made me think I could lie to him and get away with it?
"Of course I wanted to impress you, Master Kilvin," I said, looking down. "I would think that that goes without saying."
"Do not grovel," he said. "False modesty does not impress me."
I looked up and squared my shoulders. "In that case, Master Kilvin, I am better. I learn faster. I work harder. My hands are more nimble. My mind is more curious. However, I also expect you know this for yourself without my telling you." Kilvin nodded.
"That is better. And you are right. I do know these things."
He thumbed the lamp on and off while pointing it at different things around the room.
"And in all fairness, I am duly impressed with your skill. The lamp is tidily made. The sigildry is quite cunning. The engraving precise. It is clever work."
I flushed with pleasure at the compliments.
"But there is more to artificing than simply skill,"
Kilvin said as he laid the lamp down and spread his huge hands out flat on either side of it.
"I cannot sell this lamp. It would gravitate to the wrong people. If a burglar were caught with such a tool, it would reflect badly on all Arcanists. You have completed your apprenticeship and distinguished yourself in terms of skill."
I relaxed a bit.
"But your greater judgment is still somewhat in question. The lamp itself we will melt down for metals, I suppose."
"You're going to melt down my lamp?"
I had worked for a full span on the lamp, and invested almost all the money I had on the purchase of raw materials. I had been counting on making a tidy profit once Kilvin sold it, but now... Kilvin's expression was firm.
"We are all responsible for maintaining the university's reputation, Elir Quoth. An item like this in the wrong hands would reflect badly on all of us."
I was trying to think of some way to persuade him when he waved a hand at me, shooing me towards the door.
"Go tell Man at your good news."
Disheartened, I made my way out into the workshop, and was greeted by the sounds of 100 hands busily chiselling wood, chipping stone, and hammering metal. The air was thick with the smell of etching acids, hot iron, and sweat. I spotted Manet off in the corner, loading tile into a kiln. I waited until he closed the door and backed away, mopping sweat off his forehead with the sleeve of his shirt.
"How did it go?" he asked. "Did you pass, or am I going to be stuck holding your hand for another term?"
"I passed," I said dismissively. "You were right about the modifications. He wasn't impressed."
"Told ya," he said without any particular smugness. "You have to remember that I've been here longer than any 10 students. When I tell you the masters are conservatives at heart, I'm not just making noise. I know."
Manet ran a hand idly over his wild grey beard as he eyed the heat waves rolling off the brick kiln.
"Any thoughts on what you're going to do with yourself now that you're a free agent?"
"I was thinking of doping a batch of the blue lamp emitters," I said.
"The money is good," Manet said slowly. "Risky, though."
"You know I'm careful," I reassured him.
"Risky is risky," Manet said. "I trained a fellow maybe 10 years back. What was his name?"
He tapped his head for a moment, then shrugged.
"He made a little slip." Manet snapped his fingers sharply. "Well, that's all it takes. Got burnt pretty badly and lost a couple of fingers. Wasn't much of an artificer afterwards."
I looked across the room at Kammer, with his missing eye and bald, scarred head.
"Point taken."
I flexed my hands anxiously as I looked over at the burnished metal canister. People had been nervous around it for a day or two after Kilvin's demonstration, but it had soon become just another piece of equipment. The truth was, there were 10,000 different ways to die in the fishery if you were careless. Bone tar just happened to be the newest, most exciting way to kill yourself. I decided to change the subject.
"Can I ask you a question?"
"Fire away,"
he said, glancing at the nearby kiln.
"Get it? Fire away."
I rolled my eyes.
"Would you say you know the university as well as anyone?"
He nodded.
"As well as anyone alive? All the dirty little secrets?"
I lowered my voice a bit.
"So if you wanted to, could you get into the archives without anyone knowing?"
Manet's eyes narrowed.
"I could," he said. "But I wouldn't."
I started to say something, but he cut me off with more than a hint of exasperation.
"Listen, my boy. We've talked about this before, just be patient. You need to give Lauren more time to cool off. It's only been a term or so."
"It's been half a year,"
he shook his head.
"That only seems like a long time to you because you're young. Believe me, it's fresh in Lauren's mind. Just spend another term or so impressing Kilvin, then ask him to intercede on your behalf.
Trust me, it'll work."
I put on my best hangdog expression.
"You could just..."
He shook his head firmly.
"No, no, no. I won't show you, I won't tell you, I won't draw you a map."
He softened his expression and lay a hand on my shoulder, obviously trying to take some of the sting out of his bald refusal.
"Sailu, anyway, why all the hurry? You're young. You have all the time in the world."
He leveled a finger at me.
"But if you get expelled, it's forever. And that's what'll happen if you're caught sneaking into the archives."
I let my shoulders slump, dejected.
"You're right, I suppose."
"That's right, I'm right,"
Manet said, turning back to look at the kiln.
"Now run along, you're giving me an ulcer."
I walked away, thinking furiously about Manet's advice and what he had let slip in our conversation. In general, I knew his advice was good. If I were well behaved for a term or two, I would get access to the archives. It was the safe, simple route to what I wanted. Unfortunately, I couldn't afford patience. I was painfully aware of the fact that this term would be my last, unless I could find a way to make a great deal of money rather quickly. No, patience wasn't an option for me. On my way out, I peered inside Kilvin's office and saw him sitting at his work table, idly thumbing my lamp on and off. His expression was distracted again, and I didn't doubt that his vast machine of a brain was busy thinking about a half dozen things all at once. I knocked on the doorframe to get his attention. "Master Kilvin?" He didn't turn to look at me.
Yes?
Could I buy the lamp? I asked.
I could use it to read at night. Right now I'm still spending money on candles.
I briefly considered wringing my hands before deciding against it, too melodramatic. Kilvin thought for a long moment. The lamp in his hand gave a soft tick as he switched it on again.
You cannot buy what your own hands build, he said. The time and materials that made it were yours.
He held it out to me.
I stepped into the room to take it, but Kilvin drew his hand back and met my eye.
I must make clear one thing, he said seriously. You cannot sell or lend this, not even to someone you trust. If this is lost, it would eventually end up in the wrong hands and be used for skulking about in the dark, doing dishonest things.
I give you my word, Master Kilvin. No one will be using it but me.
As I left the shop, I was careful to keep my expression neutral, but inside I was wearing a wide, satisfied smile. Manet had told me exactly what I needed to know. There was another way into the archives. A hidden way. If it existed, I could find it.
Chapter 65 Spark. I lured Will and Sim to the Aeolian with the promise of free drinks, the one piece of generosity I could afford. You see, while Ambrose's interference might keep me from gaining a wealthy noble as a patron, there were still plenty of regular music lovers who bought me more drinks than I could comfortably consume on my own. There were two simple solutions to this. I could become a drunk, or use an arrangement that has been around for as long as there have been taverns and musicians. Attend to me as I draw back the curtain to reveal a long-kept minstrel's secret. Let's say you are out at an inn. You listen to me play. You laugh, cry, and generally marvel at my craft. Afterwards, you want to show your appreciation, but you don't have the wherewithal to make a substantial gift of money like some wealthy merchant or noble. So you offer to buy me a drink. I, however, have already had a drink, or several drinks, or perhaps I am trying to keep a clear head. Do I refuse your offer? Of course not. That would just waste a valuable opportunity and most likely leave you feeling snubbed. Instead, I graciously accept and ask bartender for a Graysdale mead, or a Sumpton, or a particular vintage of white wine. The name of the drink isn't the important thing. The important thing is that the drink doesn't really exist. The bartender gives me water. You pay for the drink. I thank you graciously, and everyone walks away happy. Later, the bartender, the tavern, and the musician share your money three ways. Better yet, some sophisticated drinking establishments allow you to keep drinks as a sort of credit for future use. The Aeolian was such a place. That is how, despite my poverty-stricken state, I managed to bring an entire dark bottle of Scutton back to the table where Will and Sim waited. Will eyed it appreciatively as I sat down.
What's a special occasion?
Calvin approved my sympathy lamp. You're looking at the Arcanum's newest journeyman artificer, I said a little smugly. Most students spend at least three or four terms finishing their apprenticeships. I kept my mixed success with the lamp to myself.
About time,
Will said dryly.
Took you, what, almost 3 months? People were beginning to say that you'd lost your touch.
I thought you'd be more pleased, I said as I peeled the wax off the top of the bottle. My days of being a pinchpenny might be coming to an end. Sim made a dismissive noise.
You stand your round well enough, he said. I drink to your continued success as an artificer, Will said, sliding his cup towards me, knowing it will lead to more drinks in the future.
Plus, I said as I stripped the last of the wax away, there's always the chance that if I get you drunk enough, you'll let me slip into the archive someday when you're working the desk. I kept my tone carefully jovial as I glanced up at him to gauge his reaction. Will took a slow drink, not meeting my eye.
I can't.
Disappointment nestled sourly in the pit of my stomach. I made a dismissive gesture,
as if I couldn't believe he'd taken my joke seriously.
Oh, I know.
I thought about it, Willem interrupted. Seeing as how you didn't deserve the punishment you got, and I know how much has been bothering you. Will took a drink. Lauren occasionally suspends students. A handful of days for too loud talking in the tombs. A few span if they're careless with a book. But banned is different. That hasn't happened in years. Everyone knows. If anyone saw you, he shook his head, I'd lose my position as scriv. We could both get expelled. Don't beat yourself up, I said. Just the fact that you considered it means...
We're getting maudlin here,
Sim broke in, knocking his glass against the table. Open the bottle and we'll drink to Kilvin being so impressed that he talks to Lauren and gets you unbanned from the archives. I smiled and began to work a screw into the cork.
I have a better plan, I said. I vote we drink to the perpetual confiscation and botherment of a certain Ambrose Jackis.
I think we can all agree to that, Will said, raising his glass.
Great God, Simon said in a hushed tone. Look what Diok found.
What's that? I asked, concentrating on getting the cork out all in one piece.
He's managed to get the most beautiful woman in the place again.
Sim's grumble was uncharacteristically surly.
It's enough to make you hate a man.
Sim, your taste in women is questionable at best. The cork came free with a pleasing sound, and I held it up triumphantly for them to see. Neither of them paid me any attention, their eyes pinned to the doorway. I turned to look. Paused.
That's Denner.
Sim turned back to look at me.
Denner?
I frowned.
Deanne. Denner, she's the one I told you about before, the one who sang with me. She goes by a lot of different names, I don't know why.
Willem gave me a flat look.
That's your girl?
He asked, his voice thick with disbelief.
Diok's girl,
Simon amended gently. It seemed to be the case. Handsome, muscular Diok was talking to her in that easy way he had. Denner laughed and put an arm around him in a casual embrace. I felt a heavy weight settle in my chest as I watched them talk. Then Diok turned and pointed. She followed his gesture, met my eyes, and lit up as she smiled at me. I returned the smile by reflex alone. My heart began to beat again. I waved her over. After a quick word to Diok, she began to make her way through the crowd towards us. I took a quick drink of scutton as Simon turned to look at me with an almost reverent disbelief. I had never seen Denner dressed in anything other than travelling clothes, but tonight she was wearing a dark green dress that left her arms and shoulders bare. She was stunning. She knew it. She smiled. The three of us stood as she approached.
I was hoping to find you here, she said.
I gave a small bow.
I was hoping to be found. These are two of my best friends. Simon?
Sim smiled sunnily and brushed his hair away from his eyes.
And Willem.
Will nodded.
This is Deanne.
She lounged into a chair.
What brings such a group of handsome young men out on the town tonight?
We're plotting the downfall of our enemies,
Simon said.
And celebrating,
I hurried to add. Willem raised his glass in a salute.
Confusion to the enemy!
Simon and I followed suit, but I stopped when I remembered Denner didn't have a glass.
I'm sorry, I said. Can I buy you a drink?
I was hoping you would buy me dinner, she said, but I would feel guilty about stealing you away from your friends.
My mind raced as I tried to think of a tactful way to extricate myself.
You're making the assumption that we want him here?
Willem said with a straight face.
You'd do us a favour if you took him away.
Denner leaned forward intently, a smile brushing the pink corners of her mouth.
Really?
Willem nodded gravely.
He drinks even more than he talks.
She darted a teasing look at me.
That much?
Besides, Simon chimed in innocently, he'd sulk for days if he missed a chance to be with you. He'll be completely worthless to us if you leave him here. My face grew hot, and I had the sudden urge to throttle Sim. Denner laughed sweetly.
I suppose I'd better take him then.
She stood with emotion like a willow wand bending to the wind, and offered me her hand. I took it.
I hope to see you again, Willem, Simon.
They waved, and we started to make our way to the door.
I like them, she said. Willem is a stone in deep water. Simon is like a boy splashing in a brook.
Her description startled a laugh from me. I couldn't have said it better.
You mentioned dinner?
I lied, she said with an easy delight, but I would love the drink you offered me. How about the taps? She wrinkled her nose.
Too many old men, not enough trees. It is a good night to be out of doors.
I gestured towards the door.
Lead the way.
She did. I basked in her reflected light and the stares of envious men. As we left the Aeolian, even Diog looked a little jealous. But as I passed him, I caught a glimmer of something other in his eye. Sadness? Pity? I spared no time for it. I was with Denner. We bought a loaf of dark bread and a bottle of Avenish strawberry wine, then found a private place in one of the many public gardens scattered throughout Imre. The first of autumn's falling leaves danced along the streets beside us. Denner removed her shoes and danced lightly through the shadows, delighting in the feel of the grass beneath her feet. We settled on a bench beneath a great spreading willow, then abandoned it and found more comfortable seats on the ground at the foot of the tree. The bread was thick and dark, and tearing chunks of it gave us distraction for our hands. The wine was sweet and light, and after Denner kissed the bottle, it left her lips wet for an hour. It had the desperate feel of the last warm night of summer. We spoke of everything and nothing, and all the while I could hardly breathe for the nearness of her, the way she moved, the sound of her voice as it touched the autumn air.
Your eyes were far away just then, she said. What were you thinking?
I shrugged, buying a moment to think. I couldn't tell her the truth. I knew every man must compliment her. Bury her in flattery more cloying than roses. I took a subtler path. One of the masters at the university once told me that there were 7 words that would make a woman love you. I made a deliberately casual shrug. I was just wondering what they were.
Is that why you talk so much? Hoping to come on them by accident?
I opened my mouth to retort. Then, seeing her dancing eyes, I pressed my lips together and tried to fight down my embarrassed flush. She lay a hand on my arm.
Don't go quiet on my account, Cloth, she said gently. I'd miss the sound of your voice.
She took a drink of wine.
Anyway, you shouldn't bother wondering. You spoke them to me when we first met. You said, I was just wondering why you're here.
She made a flippant gesture.
From that moment, I was yours.
My mind flashed back to our first meeting in Rowan's caravan. I was stunned.
I didn't think you remembered.
She paused in tearing a piece of dark bread away from the loaf and looked up at me quizzically.
Remember what?
Remembered me. Remembered our meeting in Rowan's caravan.
Come now, she teased. How could I forget the red-haired boy who left me for the university?
I was too stunned to point out that I hadn't left her. Not really.
You never mentioned it. Neither did you, she countered. Perhaps I thought that you had forgotten me. Forget you? How could I?
She smiled at that, but looked down at her hands.
You might be surprised what men forget, she said,
then lightened her tone.
But then again, perhaps not. I don't doubt that you've forgotten things, being a man yourself.
I remember your name, Denner. It sounded good to say it to her. Why did you take a new one? Or was Denner just the name that you were wearing on the road to Annalyn?
Denner, she said softly. I'd almost forgotten her. She was a silly girl.
She was like a flower unfolding.
I stopped being Denner years ago, it seems.
She rubbed her bare arms and looked around as if she was suddenly uneasy that someone might find us here.
Shall I call you Diane, then? Would you like it better?
The wind stirred the hanging branches of the willow as she cocked her head to look at me.
Her hair mimicked the motion of the trees.
You are kind. I think I like Denna best from you. It sounds different when you say it. Gentle.
Denna it is, I said firmly. What happened in Annalyn anyway? A leaf floated down and landed in her hair. She brushed it away absent-mindedly.
Nothing pleasant, she said, avoiding my eyes. But nothing unexpected either.
I held out my hand and she passed me back the loaf of bread.
Well, I'm glad you made it back, I said.
My Halloween. She made a decidedly unladylike noise.
Please, if either of us is Savian, it's me. I'm the one that came looking for you, she pointed out. Twice.
I look, I protested. I just don't seem to have a knack for finding you. She rolled her eyes dramatically. If you could recommend an auspicious time and place to look for you, it would make a world of difference.
I trailed off gently, making it a question. Perhaps tomorrow?
Denna gave me a sideways glance, smiling.
You're always so cautious, she said. I've never known a man to step so carefully.
She looked at my face as if it were a puzzle she could solve.
I expect noon would be an auspicious time tomorrow. At the Aeolian.
I felt a warm glow at the thought of meeting her again.
I was just wondering why you're here, I mused aloud, remembering the conversation that seemed so long ago. You called me a liar afterwards.
She leaned forward to touch my hand in a consoling way. She smelled of strawberry, and her lips were a dangerous red even in the moonlight.
How well I knew you, even then.
We talked through the long hours of night. I spoke subtle circles around the way I felt, not wanting to be overbold. I thought she might be doing the same, but I could never be sure. It was like we were doing one of those elaborate Madigan court dances, where the partners stand scant inches apart, but if they are skilled, never touch. Such was our conversation. But not only were we lacking touch to guide us, it was as if we were also strangely deaf. So we danced very carefully, unsure what music the other was listening to, unsure perhaps if the other was dancing at all. Diok was standing vigil at the door, same as always. He waved to see me.
Master Kvothe, I'm afraid you've missed your friends.
I thought I might have. How long have they been gone?
Only an hour.
He stretched his arms above his head, grimacing, and let them fall to his sides with a weary sigh. Did they seem put out that I abandoned them? He grinned.
Not terribly. They happened on a couple of lovelies of their own. Not as lovely as yours, of course.
He looked uncomfortable for a moment, then spoke slowly as if he were picking his words with great care.
Look, Kvothe, I know it's not my place, and I hope you don't take it wrong.
He looked around and suddenly spat.
Damn, I'm no good at this sort of thing.
He looked back at me and gestured vaguely with his hands.
You see, women are like fires, like flames. Some women are like candles, bright and friendly. Some are like single sparks or embers like fireflies for chasing on summer nights. Some are like campfires, all light and heat for a night and willing to be left after. Some women are like hearth fires, not much to look at, but underneath they're all warm red coal that burns a long, long while. But Deanne is like a waterfall of spark pouring off a sharp iron edge that God is holding to the grindstone. You can't help but look, can't help but want it. You might even put your hand to it for a second, but you can't hold it. She'll break your heart.
The evening was too fresh in my memory for me to pay much heed to Diok's warning. I smiled. Diok, my heart is made of stronger stuff than glass. When she strikes, she'll find it strong as iron-bound brass or gold and adamant together mixed. Don't think I am unaware, some startled deer to stand transfixed by hunter's horns. It's she who should take care. For when she strikes, my heart will make a sound so beautiful and bright that it can't help
but bring her back to me in winged flight.
My words startled Diok into bemused laughter.
God, you're brave,
he shook his head.
And young. I wish